Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback.
We're the largest landowner in Arlington Heights.
Surprise, surprise. Surprise, surprise.
They are the largest landowner in Arlington Heights. But for the last year or so, this seemed to not be important to the Bears as they continue to spend money on that property in Arlington Heights.
Do you believe that Kevin Warren's intentions with the lakefront are truly based in him falling in love with the idea of the Bears on the lakefront?
Yes,
Lawrence Holmes.
I do, and I'm not sure that it serves the Bears as well as he is acting like it serves the Bears.
See, I think that there is a subtext to it, which is the desire of the family to simply be a tenant as opposed to a land owner.
Because they don't have enough cash on hand to buy their own place and build their own place?
Because partially because of the cash and partially because of the big pain in the ass factor of actually owning your own place. That it is easier and more fun to be a tenant and logistically, financially makes some more sense. 30 of the 32 NFL teams are tenants where they don't actually own it. They're renters. And so, like,
I mean, that would be a paradigm shift for them, that because you spent $200 million. Like
on the land. But that is a penance. That is a pittance, excuse me. That is a pittance.
It may have been a penance.
Yeah.
It may end up being a penance. Your tax was $200 million.
I think it's impressive to win some pennants, by the way.
Very important.
Like, it's not, I mean, if you don't win a World Series, but at least you won a bunch of pennants, there's nothing wrong with that.
That feels good, too.
Yeah. But no, it's like, that's going to be a small amount as compared to what they would actually have to invest and make happen with the big old billions that it would take to get the stadium. I think that they're getting some cold feet. So I think Kevin Warren's infatuation goes along nicely with the cold feet of actually wanting to just rent instead.
So you don't think that he might be opposed to what the family wants? That maybe the family is like, all right, well, Kevin, if you can get this done in the city, fine.
Yeah, we're cool with that. No, it's nice to rent. It's okay.
Fine, but there's a ticking clock here, and we need to get something done.
Right.
I
don't think there's any way that they would let his romance and infatuation change their mind from what they actually want to do. So I think the romance and the infatuation is leading the way as a sales tactic, but it goes along with what they'd actually like to do.
I don't know. Like, I get the vibe that maybe he does see it as being something that means more. Like, when you listen to the mayor, who is one of his allies on this, them talking about the importance of the team being in Chicago, which to me is ridiculous, but the way that they talk about it, it's very strange. The other thing is that, and I'm looking at this from the perspective of someone who's spent a lot of time at Halas Hall,
mm-hmm.
and I've heard a lot of complaining at different levels of the Bears organization about being a tenant. Now, the good thing is I feel like Brandon Johnson has done a much better job than his predecessors of reaching out to the Bears and making the Bears feel better about the overall relationship between the city and the club. The problem is still, and you saw some of it over the last couple of weeks, the Bears can't quite get their hands on Soldier Field as much as they would like to make sure the playing surface is as good as they want. That's something that changes if you own it. They don't have right of first refusal when it comes to who the city and the park district can bring in. So whether we're talking about Metallica or the Rolling Stones or Kanye West building a house on the 50-yard line, high school teams, college teams playing games there, that's something that they can't control in their partnership. And they're trying to. They're trying to tell you that they want to have all of the benefits of ownership with a lease.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. And at every turn, they're being told, no, that doesn't really work for the city, nor does it work for the state.
Right. They think that they are incredibly unique and an exception to some ways that things get done because they are the Chicago freaking Bears. But guess what? Jerry Jones got that done because they were the Dallas freaking Cowboys. And sometimes an NFL team does carry that sway. Pritzker's talking tough. But the Bears might believe that they are special enough to get done what they want.
Ah, but then we start to get into local and national politics.
Oh, and that's where it gets super fun.
Of course, Jerry Jones is able to move the governor of Texas on something. I'm not sure the Bears can move this particular governor at this particular time.
That's what they're asking Kevin Warren to be smooth enough to do.
Now, to really get in the weeds and start looking down the road on this, if the election doesn't go blue, then you might be in a situation where the next candidate in 2028 is the governor of Illinois. And it might help in that regard for the Bears because he'll be building a national platform. But one of his platforms is still no public money for private enterprise, and that's a way that he's going to sell himself. So it could also work poorly for the Bears in that regard.
Let me say, let's take this moment to get reacquainted with your platform for mayor, if you're ever going to run for mayor.
Yes.
There's a few different things.
I have softened on
there was a honey bun and a Flamin' Hot thing.
Yeah, we're not going to let the kids just eat honey buns and
Flamin' Hots. I support that.
Yeah, I mean we got to do something in that regard to help them out. You know, a couple of pieces of fruit will help out.
Yeah.
Cut out the honey buns, Emma.
Yeah.
So you've evolved.
Yeah, Emma.
Your platform has evolved.
Yeah, we're always evolving and trying to make things happen.
All right.
But yeah, those are things that would be on my list.
Yeah, and there were some other things that came up recently.
Well, I evolved on the pants thing too. You know, I feel like if kids want to wear their pants down low, that's fine. I do think that
I don't think so. I'm opposed to that.
When
I see the kids wearing their pants down low, I'm just like, what are you doing?
I do always wonder, though, how are you going to get away? Like, if ever there's some sort of altercation,
right,
how are you going to get away?
But just like, when you get on the bus, like, I've been on the bus plenty of times, and I'm like, I'm seeing way too much of your backside.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But okay. I think that it might be a good idea to
invest in
hip surgery and hip replacement. Because eventually those young people are going to need that.
It's also just not comfortable.
It's much more comfortable
to belt your pants at your waistline. Much more comfortable.
That seems to be like a really good place to belt your pants.
At your waistline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Put up your pants, my man!
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
Well, that's interesting.
But to get back to the Bears and how they try to thread this needle, because it's a difficult thing that they're trying to do here. While they sit on the plot of land.
Mm-hmm.
I still believe that had Kevin Warren been hired, the things that he's doing that actually could have made a difference before they bought the land would have been done. I think that I'm telling you, like in my mind, in the fan fiction of it, I can imagine Kevin Warren in his place talking to his lovely wife, Greta, looking through the deal and being like, they did what? Why would you take away, like him just flipping through the pages and being like, why would you take away all of our leverage by buying a plot of land for $200 million? And we still don't have the tax thing figured out there either? What the bleep? I'm going to go wash my car. Like, I imagine that being how that plays out in the one-man play that I will be, I'll have that going on at the University of Chicago's theater.
Oh, man.
We're just going to call it Kevin.
And you're going to play him?
I'm going to play Kevin.
Oh, hell yeah.
I've been keeping it a secret. But
I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah, that's going to be the one-man play.
I'd like to collaborate on the music score.
Sure.
If I could do that. I bring in some of my people. We'll make it very kind of biblical at some times.
Sure.
Have some coronation vibes.
Cranes
other times.
In the Sky by Solange.
By Solange.
Should absolutely be a part
we'll
of it.
We'll have to get clearance. I'll ask my music supervisor to do some of the legal work on that.
All of that works.
All right, that's good.
So...
this is all coming together. Did Kevin Warren speak on the stadium today?
He did, and we want to share that with you. That's
one of the things I always look at coming home to the city is I always look for cranes in the air.
Yes.
Cranes in the sky.
He did. The whole reason that we're talking about this is because we talked about it a little bit yesterday and then was followed up today where Kevin Warren gave an update on kind of where things stand with the Bears and their stadium situation.
One of my favorite subjects. Thanks for asking that. I mean, status is we're continue to make progress. I mean, we have a plan. We stay focused still to be able to be in the ground, start construction sometime in 2025. There's a lot of activity that's still going on. We're having regular meetings with key business leaders, key politicians, just staying focused and on course. You know, this is a long journey. On any of these stadium projects, you try to make it as straight of a journey as you possibly can. But this takes time. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of energy. I've been there before. And so we're exactly where I thought we would be at this point in time.
Do you still believe that downtown is the right place?
That is the focus right now. And I think when you see last weekend, if you know, we're at the game on that beautiful day in Chicago, you know, with the lake, the nice breeze, it just shows again what we've been talking about. That museum campus is fantastic. And especially with the backdrop of Chicago and the architecture of that city. So that remains our focus at this point in time.
All right. So look, here's the thing. Yeah, that was gorgeous. This past Sunday, I mean, it was exquisite to have the city there, to be there, to be walking around the campus. I had a lovely day.
Newsflash, Chicago architecture is beautiful. Who knew? Guys, did you... I don't know if you...
It's beautiful.
Who knew? Chicago architecture was beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
I must admit, having better access to the lakefront and using some of the tax dollars that would come along with this project to do that would be a good and healthy thing.
I am not convinced that that is going to be the case, and that's part of the problem. Not that I'm not convinced.
I understand.
But
that they're using that as window dressing to get it done when it actually won't end up happening.
Yeah, and the other problem is actual literal space.
To do these things.
Right.
I hear you.
There's not a lot of places for them to go.
We could get lost down rabbit holes throughout the whole thing, but here's more, Kevin.
Do you feel the Chicago site is imminent or inevitable?
I don't know saying imminent or inevitable. I think it's the best site, you know, as of now, because one of the things we have to do, and is great about traveling here, and it's a reminder of how small this world is. And that's one of the reasons why we're here is to shrink the world. When you look at the infrastructure, when you look at the city of London, you look how things are built here. We have an opportunity in Chicago to really think creatively out of the box to say that we have a piece of land. I still argue it's the most beautiful piece of land in the world with the lake, with the downtown, with the museum campuses. And what can we do to be able to pull all that together in and around the museum campuses, downtown, the lake, a football stadium, green space. And so I look at it as an opportunity.
Do you feel like there's a scenario that exists where there's just too many hoops to jump through in Chicago, bag it, and go to Arlington Heights? Is that a possible scenario?
Again, our focus right now is on Chicago.
Are you concerned at all that public funding for the project will not come through?
I mean, concern is probably a strong word. I'm focused on making sure, you know, that we structure the best financial deal for all parties involved. And, you know, I have to understand the reality. It's no different than interest rates dropping. You have to be prepared. So I watch everything. You know, I go into these kind of negotiations and this process of making sure we understand what exists, what are the opportunities that exist. And I don't look at these negotiations as a winner and a loser. I look at it collectively. What can we do collectively? What's in the best interest of the state of Illinois, downtown Chicago, the Chicago Bears, the National Football League, all those things are combined. And what you try to do, I want everyone to be able to walk away to say this was a beneficial exercise and an opportunity that even made us better. So this
Tanny,
can't
could you
be
pause it there for a second? Because here's one of the things that I don't like about Kevin Warren's approach. He continues to think that the Chicago Bears and Chicago are synonymous, and thinking, well, what's best for the Bears equals what's best for a citizen of the city of Chicago and the county of Cook. Now, look, when it comes to how the city feels when the Bears win, I would probably agree with him on a Monday how things are in the city. That's different, though, than what the there's, to me, a cross purpose between what's good for the Bears and what's good for the city, the county, and for the state. And he kind of keeps trying to tie those things together as if, well, if the Bears get this awesome stadium, then it's going to be great for everyone, where access to all sorts of things in the city of Chicago are in question for many of its citizens. And so when you're asking for public money or a public rubber stamp to help find public money for your private organization, it's a hard thing to try and convince a citizen of the city or of the state of. The other thing, the kind of the difference between when you brought up Dallas, for example.
Yes.
There are plenty of places in the state of Illinois where they don't give a damn about the Chicago Bears. As weird as that is for us, because we know in Chicagoland, that is it. Like, that's a big thing. But once you get south of Kankakee, there's some split fandom down there. There are people that are Indianapolis Colts fans and whatever. And then there's the schism between what happens in Springfield or places south of Kankakee and Chicago. And there are plenty of people and plenty of lawmakers who don't want to make anything easy for people that are representing Chicago.
And want them to use all of their own money. And Arlington Heights, at this point, would be all of their own money if the governor does not go along with anything. So rather than spend all of their own money at $4-5 billion to invest and make it happen, he's hoping to have to spend $2 billion on the lakefront as part of a $5 billion investment that the state will help with.
And some
and they
people
could
are
have
saying
all
that's
the
closer
benefits.
To $6 billion.
I understand, but do the percentages. He's doing this because the family would rather have a smaller investment and stay a renter and still end up with the big stadium and the splashy Bears presence on the lakefront. They need the city, and they have found a mayor who needs them too.
Yeah, but
right
the city
now.
Doesn't move Springfield, and that's one of the problems.
Still
with
trying
not
to
knowing
hold on.
What the local politics is like.
He's still
here.
Trying to hold on to that idea that it does.
This isn't old Mayor Daley. This is new mayor. This is new embattled Mayor Johnson. But Kevin Warren went on to say,
"Loser has to be what makes us better." And that's the exciting part about working on these projects.
Still a strong relationship with the mayor, and believe that he's on board with the museum campus plan?
I feel that one of the things, and if you spend time with me, the relationships are critically important to me. So we've stayed close with the individuals in the city of Chicago. We've stayed close with individuals in Arlington Heights. We're the largest landowner there. And we've stayed close to individuals in the governor's office, from a Springfield standpoint. So I just continually work on building relationships, looking for ways that we can collectively work together to do what's right. And this stadium here in Chicago will be a game changer, not only for the National Football League, for the Chicago Bears, but primarily for the state of Illinois.
Kevin, over 2 years ago, before you got here, the Bears had a big town hall in Arlington Heights with renderings of pretty much everything except the stadium. And a lot of that talk was about the benefits of building more than a stadium on land that you own. That's obviously not the situation on the lakefront.
Correct.
It hasn't been the situation on the lakefront for a long time, and there's been plenty of headaches. I'm curious why we get the site and the views and everything, the lakefront and all that, but why what you are envisioning on the lakefront right now is overriding all those benefits that we're talking about over 2 years ago in Arlington Heights?
I don't say it's overriding. I mean, again, these process, and I look forward to the press conference we have at the ribbon cutting, we'll be able to look back on this, they are fluid. And so it's not about overriding, because every piece of land, every location is not the same. And I'm one of those individuals that looks at the benefits of every location. And if you look at the museum campus, it has attributes that don't exist anywhere in the world. Arlington Heights has attributes that are really unique. You have 326 acres, it's split by a river. There's things that you can do there from a mixed-use development. But I always look at it as no different than a game plan in football. What are the positive attributes? And so now, because we're focused on the museum campus, there's certain attributes that that has. Yes, it's not 326 acres. There's things you won't be able to do that you could do in other locations. But when you look at the benefits of Chicago and what's it mean, it's just different. And that's what makes it exciting about this project.
I thought that was an excellent question by Adam Hoge at the end there about, you guys tried to sell us that Arlington Heights was the move, and now you're saying that it's not?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very weird pivot.
He is scrambling to find some way to get public money in a landscape where
people don't want it, appetite
for that has gone away.
The Kansas City Chiefs couldn't get it.
I know. He couldn't even get the portion of it that they wanted. But and the Vikings got it when they did their stadium. They got
the environment,
a sizable chunk.
Is different now. People are smarter now. They are learning more about what happens in some of those places. And whether you're talking about building Olympic villages,
sure,
or you're talking about building new stadiums, the public's like, wait a minute, this is some voodoo economics that's going on here, mm-hmm, where you're talking about what the economic impact is going to be. And then in this particular case, you look up and like, oh, wait, there's still a note due on the place,
sure,
that you redid 20 years ago.
I get it. But if the Bears are pitching a collaborative thing where city, state, and Bears all come together to keep it going with the Bears as a jewel for the lakefront, and he's hoping that all the powers will realize that that works best. And
well, unfortunately, this is not the time of Mike Madigan and Mayor Daley. Mm-hmm. We are not there anymore. And those might have been ways that you were able to do it. And I think that I honestly think that thing that they did on the lakefront, they overplayed their hand. And I with a mayor that
by showing that whole thing.
Yeah. And by thinking that the mayor was going to help them when he doesn't really have a mandate right now on any subject. Like you talk to people who even voted for Brandon Johnson, and they will tell you that their feelings about him have completely changed from the time that he was elected to now. So I don't know. Like it seems like it's pretty clumsy, and would be less clumsy in Arlington Heights, but we'll see. Maybe they'll be able to pull this thing out.
It'd be less clumsy, but they'd have to come up with a ton more money.
Which is another thing that we should talk about at some point, but not right now. Why? Because we're getting ready to turn the page. We're going to turn the page on last week's games. We're going to get you ready for Jacksonville, and we're going to take a look at the NFC North. All of that is next here on The Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't you guys do a Turn the Page segment
Wednesday?
It's time to Turn the Page.
Turn the Page Wednesday.
I don't know when I turn the page.
What we feel like is a great opportunity to turn the page.
We just haven't been able to, like, turn the page.
That's what you have to do. You got to turn the page.
I think now we all can move on.
Looking ahead to this week's opponent.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Because we need to know when to turn the page.
There I go.
Time on a Wednesday afternoon on Spiegel and Holmes for us to turn the page and look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. A horrific start to the season. Doug Peterson blew the Dolphins game as a coach. Trevor Lawrence blew the Browns game as a player with some help from Peterson's offensive scheme. Game three, then, Lawrence Holmes, was the 47-10 loss to the Bills on Monday Night Football. One of the worst losses in the history of the franchise.
It was a sad Monday night experience. I'm a Trevor Lawrence fan, and I was in shock at how bad he was in that game.
He played a little bit better against the Texans, and they almost beat the Texans, except for a C.J. Stroud touchdown with 18 seconds left. But still, at 0-4, a disaster. Doug Peterson was pointing the finger at Trevor and the players, almost lost the locker room. Then they beat the Colts. Trevor Lawrence was truly great last week. In rhythm, accurate, tight windows, good deep balls. 82.4% of his passes complete for 371, two touchdowns, and one pick. He did not seem to be broken anymore. And Trevor Lawrence talked about what happened, what has gone well, and how the team responded.
No, I mean, I can only speak for myself. I mean, maybe some other guys use that. I didn't feel like I necessarily did. Kind of been just hunkering down and not looking or listening to anything, honestly. And I'm going to continue to do that even when you have a good game. I mean, it's that stuff doesn't matter. You know, you can't listen to the good or the bad. So I do think stuff that does get through, and I'm sure there's a lot of questions, like what's going on with the Jags, what's this, what's that, after 4 weeks, and good, you know, we'll use that as a chip on our shoulder and have that us against the world mentality and bring us closer together, and I think that that's what good teams do. So, but I also think you don't want to let that stuff creep in, because it's really about the guys in that building and the work we put in, and I'm just proud of the group. But it's just one game, you know, we can't flip out over one game, but we are going to celebrate it because we've been working hard, and it's big for us, and we're going to use it to propel us.
And then CBS said early in the game that you and Gabe kind of got into it, and you maybe even threw a tablet. Was there an exchange over there on the sideline?
Sat it down firmly. No.
Set it down roughly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
He sat the tablet down firmly. That's all. Look, the Colts secondary is bad. It's cover three defense. It's easily gettable. The Bears got it, but still, Trevor was really good. Brian Thomas Jr., their rookie wideout, has been a good deep threat. Fastest ball carrier in the NFL on that 85-yard touchdown. He went over 22 miles per hour.
My favorite receiver in this draft, by the way.
Not mine. You know why? Because he's built for Guagi but doesn't have Guagi go-up-and-get-it skills.
You guys heard of Guagi? Uh-huh. Go up and get it, guy.
And he, in fact, dropped two tight window catches in that Colts game.
I'm concerned about this game.
Well, I understand. Tank Bigsby's been great. Angry runs aplenty. A power back, while Travis Etienne is a tool in space with the passing game. Evan Ingram might be back this week. That offense, 15th in yardage, 20th in passing yards, 8th in rushing yards, 30th in points is the defense, allowing 28 points per game. Defense has been brutal. 31st in total yards, 32nd, dead last in passing yards. But against the Colts, Joe Flacco put up some numbers, but Trayvon Walker had the best game of his career. That defensive end, 7 pressures, 3 sacks, almost had 5 sacks, showed the bull rush, speed to power, stunted inside too, had a great fourth quarter. Secondary, very gettable. Their number one corner, Tyson Campbell, still hurt. Ronald Darby has been struggling as their number one. The safety, Tayshawn Gibson, old friend alert, is also hurt, not back yet. Linebackers have played okay, but the whole thing's been kind of a mess on defense. But there are your Jags at 1-4, not 0-5, but that's a legit offense the Bears are going to have to deal with.
All right, so the pages turn to the next game, but let's also take a look at the NFC North.
Very satisfying. To the north we go.
Let's take our focus to the north. The reigning NFC North champion Detroit Lions are back to work after an early bye week. And even Aiden Hutchinson is surprised at how good the NFC North has been so far.
The strength of the division right now. Every NFC North team is above 500.
I didn't know that. What are the Bears? I don't even.
3-2.
3-2. Yeah, they just beat. Who did they just beat?
Bears. Yeah. And okay. Every team has a +20 point differential.
Yeah. No, it's a. I mean, it's a strong division, man. It's we gotta run for our money this year. So we're gonna do everything we can to get that repeat.
6.5 sacks and 1 forced fumble for Aiden Hutchinson through 4 games played. The first place Vikings hit their bye at 5-0 following their victory in London over Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. Vikings head coach Kevin O'Connell joined the Pat McAfee show yesterday and discussed the impact that Brian Flores has made on their defense and how a former Bear player, Bear played a key role in one of the biggest plays in Sunday's game.
I think he's been a phenomenal, phenomenal addition to our team. I think he's a fantastic play caller. A lot of times defensive systems get talked about a lot, but guys got to be ready to dial it up and really understand how to adjust and adapt within games, especially with a system like ours playing against some of the quarterbacks we've played against early on in the year. You got to be ready to throw your off-speed pitches. You got to be ready to change up looks. You got to empower your players to make adjustments.
Rodgers stomps his right foot, barks out a signal, nobody jumps, and now pressure coming up the snap, thrown to the right side, intercepted, touchdown Minnesota, Andrew Van Ginkle.
Yeah, we actually, Brett Rippon did an unbelievable job in practice giving a look of kind of what it would feel like, you know, against Aaron Rodgers and the challenge that it would be by just, you know, emulating the snap count, the cadences, you know, what it would be like, what would the answers be for some of the pressures. Actually, in practice, the ball was not thrown. We kind of ran the similar pressure versus that exact same look. And I remember Flo screaming out, hey, you got to throw it, because if he throws it in the game, we got to be ready to catch it. And Gink was ready to catch it again. He's scoring a lot of touchdowns, man. I can get used to seeing Gink running down the sideline scoring touchdowns. It's been phenomenal.
Vikings are on a bye. Their next opponent, the Detroit Lions, in week 7. Green Bay got themselves to a hard-fought 24-19 victory in L.A. against the Rams on Sunday. This was in spite of Jordan Love throwing probably the most ridiculous interception that we have seen so far this year. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur was asked about Jordan Love, who has thrown 4 picks since returning from injury, and whether he's being a little reckless with the football.
All quarterbacks kind of go through this, and we just got to continue to encourage to take what's there. He's always wanted to push the ball down the field, which I respect. You know, one thing that we always talk about is sometimes you got to earn the right to throw it down the field. We've had a pretty explosive offense, and ultimately, usually going in every game, defenses are going to try to mitigate your ability to create those explosive plays, because we know explosive plays lead to points. I think every drive that we had an explosive play on, we scored, and vice versa, when we didn't score. So, but that's football. And the one to Jay Reed, I don't recommend that decision, but he threw a hell of a ball and Jaden made a heck of a catch. So it's one of those things that you're like, no, 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 yes. But I just think over time, you got to be careful with those.
Packers will host Arizona. The Lions will take on the Cowboys. That is your look at the North. And who's the king of the North? He's king of the North.
As you're talking about Jordan Love and an interception you can't throw, I'm thinking about the game-losing interception to Dre Greenlaw in the playoffs last year for the Niners.
Got a lot of Favre in him.
Yeah, he does. He does. And Favre kind of conquered that beast all the way up until the very end when he did it again as a Viking.
Yep. And then Corey Wooten got him.
Yeah, he did. But I remember that one again as a Viking because Paul Allen.
This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
He was justified in feeling that way about it.
Oh, God.
Because the whole thing was really ridiculous.
It was ridiculous.
So we have turned the page and we have looked at the NFC North.
Look at us.
Look at us.
The
next thing that we need to look at is how can we look at games? There's something that happened on yesterday's show that we need to revisit, and something that's brewing among Chicago sports fans that we have to discuss. That's next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
Well, when we launched the Chicago Sports Network this past Tuesday, there was a consistent theme through our first broadcast: Chicago comes first. And with that in mind, you're going to see something a little different tonight on our Score Bug. Even though the Blackhawks are the home team, we're listing the Hawks and all the teams featured on the Chicago Sports Network first. Panger, it's in our DNA. Chicago first.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. I think the graphics look outstanding.
Terrific.
Oh, man, I'm sorry Sufjan Stevens has to be associated with the launch of this thing. It's a little bumpy right here at the start. Lawrence Holmes?
Yeah, I can't get along with the Score Bug being kind of a declaration of what the network is.
The Score Bug,
I also don't like where it's placed.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the Score Bug, if anybody who hasn't seen it, And it was
and judging by your reactions, you haven't.
Oh. But like on the Bulls game last night, that score bug, it starts on the top left. It goes what seems to be, I don't know, 8, 9, 10% across the screen towards the middle, and then goes down in that left corner. I don't know, 22% of the way. Like it's not quite a quarter, but it looks like a banner that's hanging from the
rafters.
It's
like something that you have to click and it'll go away.
It looks big enough to have other news stories there that you could watch at the same time as you're watching the game. And that's not what you want in a score bug. You want it to be helpful but unobtrusive. This is obtrusive.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it, and I there's a part of me that respects them trying to do something that's a little bit out of the box, but I also just kind of find it, like, it feels like, you know, a little self-congratulatory, like, well, Chicago comes first and that's our thing, so we're going to do that in the score bug. But that's, I don't know if that serves your viewer the way that you think it does.
That detail about Chicago coming first, Chicago's on the top of the score bug because Chicago comes first.
Yeah.
And so that's fine when you're playing at Cleveland in a preseason basketball game, but you're telling me when they're home, they're still going to be first on the top?
That's something that I just can't get down with. It seems a little bit weird that they're doing it. And so the funny thing is, my feeling on the issue with antenna, I'm actually pro antenna. I think it's interesting that they have an over-the-air product.
Yeah, no, that whole chapter is fascinating, and you're very well-versed in media relations. I still can't get past the score bug, Lawrence. Or maybe it's blindingly stupid.
Yeah, but the score bug isn't their biggest issue. The biggest issue is
can't see the bad score bug.
People not being able to see it, and then maybe not doing as much outreach as you thought you needed to do when it comes to explaining how people could see it. Jay Zawoski was on the station yesterday, and we talked with him about this because obviously he is Mr. Hockey here in Chicago, and he's been dealing with this on the front lines. Here's what he said about this.
Well, because our call letters are CHGO, we're getting a lot of people who think we're the ones who are denying their access to the game, which has been super fun. So anytime we tweet from CHGO Blackhawks, people are like, I wish I could watch the game, you jerks. Like, we are not CHSN. We have been in business for 3 years. They are just starting. It's not us. But no, people are pissed. And look, I get it. I had to go out and buy a $40 antenna so we can watch games at the CHGO studios. I had to get one for my dad so he can watch games. The target is the 11th. That's the first Hawks regular season game that CHSN will be carrying. So if they don't get a deal done with Xfinity by then, they're going to have some very, very, very upset people, and rightfully so.
No deal with Xfinity.
Xfinity is 50% of the Chicagoland market. Just so that you understand what we're talking about.
That's why I couldn't watch it last night.
A lot of people can't.
That's me.
Or a lot of people haven't figured out how to do it yet. So it's problematic. So CHSN has been putting out some really incredible, like, welcome videos on their social media channels. And all you have to do is go look. Go look in the comment section. I think the first nice thing, Tanny and I were looking through one of the posts today. The first nice thing that was said was by Paul Pabst. And that was like 12 comments later where he was like, man, this video is really cool and very well edited. And he was right about that. But this is a growing problem. And to reiterate something that you and I talked about, you know, last week on this, you have to look at this with the context of NBC has kind of gotten out, Comcast, Xfinity, has kind of gotten out of the regional sports network business. Hence why NBC Sports Chicago no longer exists.
Uh-huh.
So the idea that they would cut CHSN a sweetheart deal on their provider, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying because they've backed out of their own RSN business. But in the end, they will want the viewers if the viewers are there. The tricky part is deadlines are supposed to make deals, and the season has begun. So Jay quotes us a different deadline, which is the first home game for the Blackhawks. And that's the first, but you've got other regular season games. Last night's Blackhawks game was on ESPN.
Yeah, that's what Jay's saying, that it won't really hit people until the broadcast on the 11th.
Yeah, so that's coming up. So that's your deadline, theoretically, what he's quoting there. But do the Blackhawks have a big enough viewership that it makes the deadline? Maybe the first Bulls regular season broadcast game.
Not this team.
This team has a 27.5 over under for win totals. There might not be a property that CHSN owns that's appetizing enough to force Xfinity to come down to where they want to come down.
Which is part of the reason why Comcast is getting out of the regional sports network game.
That's why everybody's getting out of the regional sports network
game. This is a problem all over sports. I hope that they come up with a direct-to-consumer. I hope they figure that out because I think that's the easiest fix for this, and I think it could end up making them a lot of money. Get your antennas. Try it and see how you like it. But there have been people who have complained about that too, and I feel bad because people want to watch their team, and I hope that they get their opportunity to do so.
I'm going to have to buy an antenna.
Oh, no doubt.
I'm in the knowledge acquisition business.
I got one.
I need to see games.
I'm excited about all of that. And their coverage, from what I've seen, has been pretty good overall with everything that they're trying over there, which is a good thing. But people need to be able to see it. We need to take a break. Mark Grody's going to join us with a Bears hit. Two words next here on The Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.